Hello again, everyone, wherever you may be, and welcome to the 169th edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of Iowa politics, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We're glad you're with us. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my longtime partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Welcome, Laura.
Good to be here, Dennis.
Laura, we have plenty to discuss as always, but we have a little bit of non-political breaking news just as we come on the air a few minutes ago, and this is something all Iowans will be interested in. Caitlin Clark, the Iowa Hawkeyes, became the number one draft pick of the Indiana Fever in the WNBA draft just minutes ago. Congratulations to Caitlin Clark.
Yes, and it's going to be an exciting team to watch. And I think that lots of people who never paid any attention to the WNBA before are going to be watching next year.
Absolutely. All right, enough for sports. Now let's get on to politics, and we have so much to talk about. Let's begin with the state Supreme Court hearing arguments last week on the state's six-week abortion ban that has never gone into effect. It's yours, Laura.
This was an extended oral argument. Usually the Iowa Supreme Court only hears arguments for about 30 minutes. These lasted for nearly an hour. This is over the bill that the legislature adopted last July in that special session, and Governor Kim Reynolds signed, and it was almost immediately, within a week, it was enjoined, and the state is trying to get that injunction lifted. So right now, we're at the stage of the litigation where the Iowa Supreme Court, technically the question they are considering is, should they lift the injunction that the Polk County District Court issued and allow the state to enforce that a near total abortion ban? It would eliminate probably an estimated 98% of all abortions in Iowa. Should they let the law be enforced while litigation proceeds in lower court, or should they keep the law blocked and let the lower court arguments proceed over what should be the standard of review for abortion regulations and so on?
The state solicitor general said the standard of review should be rational basis, but Planned Parenthood's lawyer talked about undue burden. Let's break that down.
Yeah, so there are several different standards of review. And what happened in 2 years ago, this is what set the stage for all of this happening. 2 years ago, the Iowa Supreme Court, in a majority opinion, they overturned the court's own abortion rights precedent and said abortion is not a fundamental right subject to strict scrutiny. Strict scrutiny is the highest bar that the state needs to clear if there's a law that's limiting somebody's constitutional right. So they left that opinion, left in place an earlier decision on abortion from 2015 that used what's called the undue burden standard. That is a balancing test that balances the interests of the pregnant person who wants to terminate the pregnancy versus the state's interest in eliminating abortions and allowing more children to be born. So that is the balancing test. And this kind of law, which bans abortion before most people even know they're pregnant, at any point that fetal cardiac activity could be detected, this would clearly not meet that undue burden test. And that's why the state, the Solicitor General Eric Wesson, was arguing that rational basis, which is the lowest bar to clear, that should be the standard of review. So if the Iowa Supreme Court agrees with that, then the idea is that the state only has to show that it has some legitimate interest. In this case, that would be protecting unborn life and discouraging abortions. And then they don't have to consider the other side of the equation about a person's liberty interest in being able to terminate a pregnancy or decide whether to have children at all.
The court's expected to make a decision by the end of June. What possible decisions could they make? There are several, aren't there?
Yes, and normally it is dangerous to make predictions based on oral arguments, but this is such an unusual case because we have two different Iowa Supreme Court cases related to abortion that just happened in the last 2 years that these justices, most of them, have participated in. So we have a pretty good idea where at least six out of the seven justices come down, because last year, you may recall, we talked about this on the show, the state tried to reinstate the earlier abortion ban that had been passed in 2018 that's very similar to the law that was passed last summer. They tried to enforce that law. The Iowa Supreme Court deadlocked 3-3 over whether that law could go into effect, and that left it enjoined. So Justice Dana Oxley did not participate in that decision. So the range of options here are the court in a 4-3 decision, and it is going to be some kind of a 4-3 decision because Justice Oxley is participating in this case. They could say rational basis is the standard for review. They could say this law very likely meets the rational basis standard, and they could allow the state to go ahead and start enforcing this law as early as this summer. They could also say rational basis is the standard, but you know what? There's a legal record that hasn't been developed yet. Let's send this back to lower court and say, keep the law blocked for now, and let the judge in lower court hear the arguments and develop more of a factual record. Or they could say, you know what? We're not going to make any final determination on the standard of review. That hasn't been litigated yet. Let's keep the law enjoined, send it back to lower court. The two sides can argue over whether it should be undue burden or rational basis. They can argue about other aspects of the law. And then eventually this case would probably find its way back to the Iowa Supreme Court anyway. So there are quite a few options. And I think talking to people who also watch the hearing, nobody really has any idea which way it's going to go. Almost none of those outcomes would surprise me at all.
So I was about to ask you, Justice Oxley did take part last Thursday. Was there any indication as to how she might be leaning?
No, she asked a lot of questions of both sides. I mean, she was very interested in questions about the standard of review, which is obviously one of the central issues. And I think that it, like I said, you can't always tell by the questions that they asked, but there were certain issues that the state raised that the justices just didn't seem interested in at all. Like the state had argued that this should be dismissed because Planned Parenthood doesn't have standing to bring a lawsuit on behalf of patients seeking an abortion. And nobody even asked any questions about that. So that doesn't seem like that's going to be relevant to their discussion. But Justice Oxley and a couple of the other justices seemed very interested in this question of what about a person's interest? What about the bodily autonomy? And again, there were a complicated set of legal precedents that people were talking about during the case, but it is really going to come down to whether the Iowa Supreme Court thinks that even though they said abortion is not a fundamental right subject to strict scrutiny, should it be subject to something higher than this rational basis review? I mean, one point that I thought was quite interesting in the oral argument was Justice Mansfield, who was the author of the 2022 opinion that overturned that abortion rights precedent. He said, going back in history, in the 19th century, there were laws banning unmarried people of the opposite sex from cohabiting. And he wanted to know, would the state be allowed to pass a law today that banned unmarried people from living together? And would you say that they would have a rational basis for that? Or would you say that that implicates some kind of liberty interest? So that suggests that at least some of the justices are not just looking at the history of abortion was banned, of course, for much of Iowa's history, but they are looking more broadly at questions of individual liberty. So I really don't know what they're going to do. I think the main piece of news was that we do know there will be some kind of majority opinion because all seven justices are part of it.
We know this is complex. We tried to simplify it, but let's sum this up now. Abortion is still legal in Iowa on this Monday night and will be legal for a while, at least for a while, up to 20 weeks of pregnancy.
That's right. And it's possible that that injunction could remain in effect for quite some time. And it's also possible that the judges could leave the law blocked for now. And then at a later stage, when the case comes back to the high court, they could end up upholding this near total abortion ban. So, but for now, as you say, abortion is legal in Iowa as it has been for some time, up to 20 weeks of pregnancy.
All right, let's move on to, yes, AEAs. How many times have we talked about AEAs on this broadcast? Well, last week we reported that House Republicans expressed concerns about the section of the new law that created some leeway on how school districts can spend some money. And they said, maybe we're going to tweak this. Well, Governor Reynolds, absolutely no questions about what she said, forget it.
Yes, I mean, it wasn't surprising because the original bill that the governor introduced in January would have completely eliminated these media and education services, which we were talking about. Remember, the AEAs provide, they're best known for providing special education services, but they provide a very wide range of services beyond that. And the pot of money that is for special education most of that is going to remain with the AEAs. But what we were talking about last week and what some House Republicans are concerned about is this money that goes to a range of media services, printing, curriculum, and education services such as professional development, literacy and math training, gifted and talented, that sort of thing. And the law is going to give school districts total flexibility over what they do with that money. They don't have to spend it on those services, and they certainly don't have to spend it with the AEAs. And that could collectively cost the AEAs something around $68 million a year if school districts just decide to take that money and then use it to pay their staff more or keep class sizes smaller or so on. And the governor wanted to eliminate these media and education services anyway. So it's not surprising that she came out and said she's not open to any further negotiations over this law. We had a deal. I was at the media availability that the House Speaker, Pat Grassley, did on Thursday, and he was asked about this. And he said he kind of downplayed the idea that House Republicans weren't aware. He said, oh, well, I was involved in all the negotiations and nobody raised this concern to me. So I didn't get the impression that that's something that he's even going to be attempting to bargain for it in these last stages of the legislative session.
All right, let's talk about what happened in the state Senate and state House last week. But let's start with what happened today on Monday in the state Senate. A bill on automated traffic cameras actually passed the Senate after it had passed the House. It's been years of trying.
The legislature is on a little bit of a roll, Dennis, in terms of bills that have been percolating for 10 years or more that are finally getting passed. You may remember in 2022, they finally passed a new version of the bottle bill. Last year, they finally passed a bill on legalizing raw milk and one on midwife licensing. And this automated traffic cameras is the kind of thing where every year bills are introduced. They rarely even get through one chamber on the floor. And yet this time, the Senate did go along with the House amendment. So let's break this down. This is short of what many Republicans would have preferred, would have been an outright ban on automated traffic cameras. That is not what this bill does. And in fact, something I learned today is that this only affects the traffic cameras that are used to issue speeding citations. This does not affect red light cameras, for instance. So the cities and the municipalities that have these cameras in place right now, they would have to go to the Iowa Department of Transportation and make a case, a real case, grounded in safety for why this is important for them to have this traffic camera there. And then the state DOT can decide whether to allow this to continue or not. Also, the municipalities are limited in the kind of fines that they can charge. And so the idea is to make this less of a money-making operation. Some of the Republicans have complained that they have conceptual problems with these automated cameras because they feel that there's no due process, but they also believe that many of them are not really related to safety. So that's what this bill is designed to do, to make sure that any cities that have these in place have to be able to demonstrate, for instance, with the S-curve on I-380 through Cedar Rapids. This is an unsafe stretch of highway if people are speeding.
And it was a 46-1 vote today in the Senate, 85-12 last week in favor in the House. In a related bill, because it talks about traffic, last week the Senate unanimously passed a bill to create safer streets for pedestrians and cyclists.
Yes, and this one had overwhelming support in the House as well. This was probably the second biggest legislative priority for the Iowa Bicycle Coalition. What they really wanted was something to deal with distracted driving and hands-free requirement for devices. They did not get that one through, but this would require, already under Iowa law, vehicles have to stop for pedestrians and crosswalks. So this would mean that they also have to stop for people on any other form of conveyance. So a bicycle, wheelchair, scooter, skateboard, someone pushing a baby carriage, the vehicle would have to stop and yield to a person in a crosswalk. And this is perceived as something that could measurably improve pedestrian safety across the state.
All right. Last week, senators also took another step toward making it a whole lot harder to raise income taxes in the state, a whole lot harder.
So this is a part of a pair of constitutional amendments that Republicans are moving. They are going to get these through this year. They then, after the next set of elections, they would have to pass the same language through the Iowa House and Senate again to get it on the ballot. But the concept behind this bill is that instead of the normal process for approving legislation that it has to get a majority vote in each chamber, 51 in the House and 26 or more in the Senate, this would say that for certain types of tax increases, income taxes and corporate taxes mainly, it would require a two-thirds vote in both chambers. That would be almost impossible to ever get a two-thirds vote for raising the income tax. But importantly, this constitutional amendment would not affect sales tax fee and other kinds of fees and assessments. Of course, it wouldn't limit what local governments can do with property taxes either. And so that was the Democrats' main argument against this, was that this would set up a system where if Iowa goes through a budget crunch in some future recession or for some other reason, then you would almost be locked into some sort of regressive method for raising more revenue.
All right. Also last week, the state Senate unanimously passed a bill that would help Boy Scout sex abuse survivors get more money through a national bankruptcy settlement. Now, again, this was unanimous, but apparently in the House, there's trouble.
So this issue of statute of limitations for people who were victims of child sexual abuse has been a thorny issue in the Iowa legislature for years. And Democratic State Senator Janet Peterson has been the most outspoken about this. Iowa did recently extend the criminal statute of limitations, but Iowa is actually the strictest state in the country when it comes to civil suits. Somebody has to file a suit. I think they only have 4 years after they reach the age of majority to file a civil suit related to past sexual abuse, or 4 years beyond the point that they remembered or became aware of the sexual abuse. And as many people who work with survivors would tell you, a lot of people aren't ready to speak about the abuse they suffered until they're well into middle age. So this bill was targeted, and it was written in a very narrow way to only apply to this one settlement. It's a national settlement, and approximately 300 to 350 Iowans may qualify for being part of this settlement with the Boy Scouts of America. And that's why it passed the Senate unanimously. But this House Speaker Grassley was asked about this at the media availability on Thursday. And he said that in his caucus, there are some real reservations about making changes to the statute of limitations and the fact that this bill didn't go through the normal committee process through the Judiciary Committee, like most bills do on the statute of limitations. So I was quite surprised because I just assumed that this would sail through the House unanimously, but it so far it hasn't been assigned to a subcommittee, so it's not clear whether it's going to come up for a vote in the lower chamber before they adjourn for the year.
And quickly, another couple of bills in the Senate. They unanimously passed a bill updating disability compensation rules for professional police and firefighters, and that bill now being sent to the governor.
Yes, and this is one where the House had passed it unanimously, and then it didn't get through the second funnel in the Senate, but the House tried again. This was something that would expand cancer coverage for in pensions for firefighters. It also would expand mental health coverage for first responders. So for instance, if they're dealing with symptoms of PTSD based on job-related incidents. And so the House tried again, and this time it went through a different committee in the Senate, and that's how it got to the floor, and it did pass unanimously.
And for the second time, the Senate passed a bill requiring specific labeling for lab-grown and plant-based meat and egg alternatives.
This one had to come back to the Senate because the House amended the bill. And in the so doing, they turned it from an uncontroversial bill on food labeling that everybody would have supported to a bill that ended up passing mostly along party lines in both chambers. And the main sticking point was that the House amendment to this bill, in addition to saying that meatless products would have to be labeled as such, it would have banned people on food assistance from purchasing egg substitutes. And Democrats raised a lot of concerns that there are many adults and especially a lot of children who are allergic to eggs. And so the question is, you know, how can you tell people on food assistance that they can't buy egg substitutes? So, but in any case, the Senate, it was clear that the Senate floor manager wasn't thrilled with the House amendment, but she said she really wanted to pass this bill to, in her words, protect the livestock producers from companies that in her mind are marketing meatless products and trying to pass them off as regular beef or pork products. And so this bill is going to the governor, and I think everybody expects her to sign it.
All right, let's take a short breath. As I say, it's 19 minutes and 20 seconds after the hour if you're listening to us live. And you're in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your front row seat for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin. We're now in our fourth year of being here in this time slot to talk about politics with an Iowa flavor. And now, this program is also available as a podcast. Just search for KHOI's Capital Week on your favorite platform, be it Apple, Google, Amazon Music, Spotify, and there we are. Again, KHOI's Capital Week. All right, let's talk about action in the State House, starting with today. The House on a 61-35 mostly party line vote. Republicans in favor, Democrats opposed, approved a bill letting teachers and other school employees carry guns on school grounds.
So this one had to come back to the House because the Senate amended it. So the main point of this bill was to make it easier for school districts to adopt policies allowing staff to be armed. Technically, that is already permissible under Iowa law, but the problem was that the school districts that tried to do this, up Cherokee and Spirit Lake up in Northwest Iowa, they found their insurance carriers said that they would drop them. So this bill has a very important provision that would grant school staff qualified immunity from both criminal prosecution or civil liability if they are using their firearms on school property and there's some kind of mishap. So the hope by the proponents of this bill is that school districts can adopt these policies, they can arm their staff, there are some training requirements in there, and that hopefully the insurance carriers would not drop the school districts. The main point of the Senate amendment was there, the House had passed some money in a fund that would give support school districts that were hiring security or school resource officers. And the Senate took that funding, that grant program out of the bill and sent it back to the House. But otherwise, very similar to a bill that the House members had already approved along party lines. And it was a party line vote in both chambers.
Also new today, Monday, the House on a 97-1 vote approved the transportation budget. They're starting to approve budgets to head toward the end of the session, aren't they?
Yeah, you know it's getting close when the appropriations bills start moving, and several of them are on the Senate's debate calendar for Tuesday of this week. And the transportation budget is the first one to get through both chambers. They typically start with ones that are less controversial, the transportation, the ag and natural resources, the economic development. And then later, as they get closer to adjournment, they start looking at the health and human services budget, the education budget, and some of those bills that are more controversial.
Also today, Monday, on a bipartisan vote, the House voted in favor of a rural attorney recruitment assistance program.
This is modeled on a program that's been successful in South Dakota. A lot of states are finding it's very difficult to get attorneys to work in rural areas, mainly because the pay is low and many people have big debts coming out of law school. So this is going to start very small. The first year, it's only going to affect 5 attorneys, but it would allow cities and counties in the state could combine. They could sign a contract with attorneys that if they promise to practice in a rural area, they would get very significant payments that would, a grant basically, that would cover most of their law school tuition or helping to pay back their law school loans. And the floor manager, Brian Losey, read some pretty alarming statistics about, for instance, Adams County, Iowa only has 1 attorney. Van Buren County, Iowa only has 2 attorneys, and one of them is over age 65. So talking about the dire shortage of attorneys in rural areas, and that's the problem this bill is trying to address.
Let's zoom down to the next issue below the one we were going to talk about. The per diems for the legislature end on Tuesday, April 16th. If you're listening to us live, that's tomorrow. That means the legislature has every reason to try to wrap up the session. Are they going to this week?
They can't finish by Tuesday. They just had, there's too much that they still need to do. But they are, by all accounts, they are trying to finish work on the budget and the last remaining bills this week. They may even stay in through Saturday to do that work. However, they may come back early next week and finish off the work. But in any case, they'll be out of here by the end of April for sure. But it won't be by the time their per diems run out. But I think the last time they actually adjourned before the per diems ran out might have been in 2010.
All right. The governor signed about 40 bills into law last week. We certainly do not have time to talk about all of them. Let's talk about a couple of the biggest ones. First one, a Texas-style immigration law.
Yes, and this is modeled on a law that's currently enjoined, and there is litigation pending before the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals on it. The idea is that entering the state illegally would become a state-level crime. This is highly unusual because the federal government broadly has jurisdiction over immigration matters. So, but this is, as I mentioned, modeled on a Texas law. Governor Reynolds, this is one of her talking points, that every state is a border state. And remember that right now, their Iowa personnel are down in Texas on their third deployment, doing work with Texas law enforcement along the border.
And the governor also signed a new law on foreign land ownership.
Yes, this is something I don't know why it took her so long to sign it. It was more than 6 weeks after it was finally approved that she finally signed it. This was something she asked the legislature to do. It's not a ban on foreign ownership, but it's more regulations, more reporting requirements, and stricter penalties for foreign farmland owners who don't abide by the new rules.
She also signed a bill on the so-called MOMS program, the More Options for Maternal Support program.
So this goes back to 2022 was the first session where Republican lawmakers allocated money to this program. It would support crisis pregnancy centers, which are centers that discourage people from having abortions. And it would give people support, sometimes things like free diapers, free car seats, and other kinds of support. And the state has had trouble getting this program off the ground because they haven't been able to find a third-party administrator. So this year's bill basically changes it so that the State Department of Health and Human Services can run the program themselves. They don't need a third-party administrator. Democrats were very unhappy with this because they say there's going to be less accountability. There were small other tweaks to the program. Of course, Democrats didn't support this program to begin with, and they support it even less now that there are going to be fewer reporting requirements, and not perhaps the public may not know how all of this money is being spent.
Another new bill is one increasing the penalties for swatting. Now, that's the reporting of false incidents of violence in hopes of getting law enforcement officers to respond. And Iowa has seen some of that.
Yes, especially last year, there was one day where many school districts got false swatting calls. It is a waste of law enforcement resources. And this was a no-brainer, unanimous in both chambers.
Another bill she signed, one on organized retail theft.
Yes, and there's still a pending bill on looting, but in any case, this is following what some other states have been doing to try to up the criminal penalties. It's not clear whether this is actually happening in Iowa, but the Republicans who supported this bill said they want to prevent it from happening, and it did pass unanimously.
Yet another new bill is one on pointing a laser toward an aircraft, which really seems like a bad idea.
Yeah, versions of this have been moving in the legislature for a while, and apparently there was some kind of an incident in the Cedar Rapids area. So yes, this was something that this can cause a safety issue, and I was surprised to hear how often this is something that pilots say have dealt with.
Yet another new law is related to the sexual exploitation of a minor by creating a false image.
Yeah, so the deep fake porn, this is something that the legislators have been working on and just trying to tweak the wording, but not a controversial bill at all. This is something because otherwise, if it's using AI, there was a loophole where people who used AI were not subject to basically the same penalties as for child pornography, and this bill fixes that.
There was also a bill signed on bestiality.
Yes. So that one, again, now I wasn't aware of this, but according to the floor manager, Dan Dawson, who works for the Division of Criminal Investigation, he said there have been some cases in Iowa. Iowa had more lax penalties on bestiality. And this makes it certain things where it's a crime, not just to engage in the acts yourself, but to solicit the acts, to offer up your own animals to somebody else to engage in these illegal acts.
Oh, my. Also, we want to get to make sure we get to this. I don't know why that bill has always intrigued me, the bestiality bill. Taylor was sentenced to 4 months in a case of fraudulent voting. And this is an interesting story because she's related to a member of the Board of Supervisors.
That's right. So this relates to the 2020 election when her husband, Jeremy Taylor, who's a member of the Woodbury County Board of Supervisors, was running in the Republican primary for Congress up in that 4th district in Northwest Iowa. And Kim Taylor, who was going around mainly in the Vietnamese community and was fraudulently getting absentee ballot request forms and in some cases filling out the ballots and returning the ballots. And she was convicted earlier this year on 52 counts of fraudulent voting and providing false information. She could have faced up to 5 years in jail for each count. The sentencing recommendation was 18 to 24 months on each count. But in fact, what she was sentenced to was 4 years in prison and then four months in prison, 4 months of home confinement, and then 2 years of supervision on probation, which was a very light sentence given this number of convictions for voter fraud. Also, all of these will happen concurrently.
We only have 30 seconds left. What do you expect to have? What kind of rush are we going to see this last week in the legislature?
A big rush. I mean, I'm watching. Of course, the budget is the one thing they have to do, but there are a lot of bills still bouncing around, not clear whether they have support in either one chamber or the other. There's the pesticide manufacturers liability shield. There's something related to charter schools that the governor wants. So not clear what's going to pass, but the budget is going to be the main thing. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do come back to finish up their work next week, but I could have some late nights at the legislature this week, Dennis.
All right, we are out of time. See you next week.
See you then.
One more note before we go. If the state legislature wraps up this year's session by the end of this week, before next Monday night's Capitol Week, I would urge you to especially make a point of tuning in to this broadcast on Monday night. I'm going to make a personal announcement if the legislature session is over. And that's all I'll say right now, except that you've been listening to Capitol Week on KHOI Community Radio, a reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will be back here next week at the same time, and we'll be talking about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics, Iowa style. Until then, good night and have a safe week.